All right, so 1 Kings 22, if you're not there already. I went literary on you this morning for our title. So.
Wow.
They say I didn't make up a word. I told the kids the other day I can make up words since I have an English degree. So I just think Osteenification was what I used in Wednesday night, and said I have license to make up words. That's my take on this soft peddling, wishy washy church thing we've got in America. It's the Osteenification of the church. All right. So the reason why I titled it this is I think we've got some parallels with, we look around the world and we see wicked people in power. We see wicked people prospering, and Ahab has prospered for a long time, but reckoning is coming in chapter 22. So there's some comfort in that. I said last week, God's judgment isn't always immediate, but it's inevitable, right? It doesn't always happen when we want to see it happen, but it will happen. Justice will be served, whether it's today or whether it's down the road or whether it's on that final day. Justice will be served, and that's what we're going to see with Ahab. So if you don't know the title, John Steinbeck used it for a novel, but he took it from a poem by a guy named Robert Burns. And if you don't do Gaelic, you probably don't read this very well.
We do Gaelic.
But, you got to be kind of Irish to get this idea. But he wrote the best laid, and it's just a portion of his poem, but he said the best laid schemes of mice and men ganged aft aglay, which means go off and awry. The best laid plans of mice and men go off and awry and leave us not but grief and pain for promised joy. So we think we've got it figured out. We think we've got the plans laid out. We think we're in control of what's happening. And then God says, not so fast, my friend. Puts us in our place sometimes. Sometimes we think we've got it, and so I guess to put it more biblically would be Proverbs 16:9. The heart of a man plans his way, but the Lord establishes the steps. Ahab has a plan. He thinks he's got this all figured out. He's gonna get around these prophecies that have been given to him, and it's not going to work out so well. So here's where we left off. Remember, now the king of Israel, that's Ahab, and Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, were sitting on their thrones, arrayed in their robes, at the threshing floor at the entrance of the gate of Samaria, and all the prophets were prophesying before them. So this big, impressive scene. We've got 400 prophets that are echoing their leader or their spokesman, who seems to be Zedekiah, who's saying, Ahab brings them in and says, should we go up to Ramoth-Gilead and take this battle, take this city back from Syria? And they say, yes, king, go. The Lord is going to give them into your hands. All 400 of them unanimously doing that. And remember, Jehoshaphat says, can we get a real prophet in here? is there anybody else that we can testify, that can testify here? And Ahab says, yeah, well, there's one other guy, Micaiah, but, he always says bad stuff, so I don't like him very much. I don't bring him in. And Jehoshaphat says, well, let's bring him in just in case. And so that's where we're going to pick up is, and you remember the drama was going on. Zedekiah picks up a set of horns and starts running around the circle there and saying, this is what you're going to do to the Syrian army. Again, horns probably not the greatest image when you're a prophet of God. And Micaiah is finally going to show up in this next section and upset this nice little scene that we've got going on. So we're going to start there in verse 13. We'll go through 28. So it says, and the messenger who went to summon Micaiah said to him, behold, the words of the prophets with one accord are favorable to the king. Let your word be like the word of one of them and speak favorably. So he gets prodded on the way in. He gets prompted. By the way, they all said it's good. You better say it's good when you get there. Okay? But Micaiah said, as the Lord lives, what the Lord says to me, that I will speak. And when he had come to the king said to him, Micaiah, shall we go to Ramoth-Gilead to battle, or shall we refrain? And he answered him, go up and triumph. The Lord will give it into the hand of the king. Now, the question is, what's his tone of voice when he says that? Okay, because you'll see as this goes on. Because look at verse 16. But the king said to him, how many times shall I make you swear that you speak to me nothing but the truth in the name of the Lord? So apparently Ahab picks up on whatever Micaiah is saying. Tell me what you really think. Tell me what you really need to say, because he says, hey, go take it. So I assume he's either being very sarcastic when he says that, or he kind of mumbles it under his breath. Hey, go take it. Lord's going to give it in your hand. And he says, hold on. I know what you're doing. Tell me the truth. And now Micaiah is going to tell him the truth. And he said,
I saw all Israel scattered on the mountains as sheep that have no shepherd. And the Lord said, these have no master. Let each return to his home in peace. And the king of Israel said to Jehoshaphat, did I not tell you that he would not prophesy good concerning me, but evil? Told you this guy's always bad news. And Micaiah said, therefore, hear the word of the Lord. I saw the Lord sitting on his throne and all the host of heaven standing beside him on his right hand and on his left. And the Lord said, who will entice Ahab that he may go up and fall at Ramoth Gilead? And one said one thing and another said another. And then a spirit came forward and stood before the Lord saying, I will entice him. And the Lord said to him, by what means? And he said, I will go out and I will be a lying spirit in the mouth of all his prophets. So that's an interesting thing happening right there. And he said, you are to entice him and you shall succeed. Go out and do so. Now, therefore, behold, the Lord is for a lying spirit in the mouth of all these your prophets. The Lord has declared disaster for you. Then Zedekiah, the son of Chenana, that's the little bullhead guy that was going before, came near and struck Micaiah on the cheek and said, how did the Spirit of the Lord go from me to speak to you? And Micaiah said, behold, you shall see on that day when you go into an inner chamber to hide yourself. So we'll see what happens to you. And the king of Israel said, seize Micaiah and take him back to Ammon, the governor of the city, and to Joash, the king's son, and say, thus says the king, put this fellow in prison and feed him meager rations of bread and water until I come in peace. And Micaiah said, if you return in peace, the Lord has not spoken by me. And he said, hear all you peoples. So Micaiah's like, don't worry, I'm not going to see you again. So clearly, clear message there. So we could have guessed by Ahab's description. But the king has summoned just the perfect guy that's going to upset this happy little scene. You know, this 400 prophets saying that they need to go. Micaiah's going to throw a wrench into all this. He brought before the two kings. Micaiah's encouraged to agree with the 400 prophets, but his reply identifies him as a man of God, for he claims he can only speak as the Lord directs him. And the prophet basically just waits for his chance to speak. All right, Micaiah, what have you to say? And so it's kind of a few good men sort of speech. But he's Ahab that says, I want the truth. And honestly, he cannot handle the truth. And when asked his opinion of the potential invasion, he initially repeats exactly what the other prophets have said, like I mentioned before. Either he speaks too quietly or too sarcastically, or Ahab becomes suspicious because he's like, I don't really believe what you're saying, because this is a guy that's always opposed him. So he walks in and says, hey, yeah, go take the city. Okay. You've never said anything positive about me before. What's going on? Okay, what do you really have to say? And he's admonished to speak the truth. So Micaiah shares a vision. He said, I saw all Israel scattered on the mountains as sheep that had no shepherd. And the Lord said, these had no master. Let each return to his home in peace. So one of two things is being said here. Either Israel has no leadership, there is no shepherd, and Israel right now is sheep scattered amongst the land with no shepherd. They're all lost. Or Ahab's going to die, and Israel is going to be scattered without a shepherd. So either way, not good. But one of the two, he's either condemning Ahab's leadership at present, or he's saying that Ahab is going to die, and that they will be left without a shepherd, and the people will be scattered all about the hills. Okay? So, and here's his vision. And here's that troubling vision that I was just mentioning as we went through. It says, I saw the Lord sitting on his throne and all the host of heaven standing beside him on his right hand and on his left, which is an amazing picture to start with. God on the throne with the angels all about him. Okay? And the Lord said, who will entice Ahab? We got to get him up to Ramoth Gilead because my will is that he loses this battle. Okay? How are we going to get him there? And one said one thing and another said another. And then a spirit came forward and stood before the Lord and said, I'll get him. I'll entice him. You know, let me go. And the Lord said, by what means? And he said, I will go out and I will be a lying spirit in the mouth of all his prophets. So there's an interesting thing going on here that God is using a lying spirit in order to accomplish his will. Okay? So there's some... That's troubling a little bit, you know? God cannot lie, and yet we've got a lying spirit coming from his throne room, really. Okay? He says, you're going to entice him. You shall succeed, go out and do so. And now, therefore, behold, the Lord has put a lying spirit in the mouth of all these your prophets. The Lord has declared disaster for you. So the Lord did this. He told them to tell you this. The lying spirit from God said, send these people out and confirm his battle plan. Okay, so to entice Ahab into the battle, that will be his last. The Lord allows a lying spirit to speak through Ahab's prophets. So there's a few questions here. You know, is Micaiah just sharing sort of a parable? I would say no. You know, I think he's saying, I saw the God on the throne. You know, he says, I saw that. It's not some, it's kind of where people talk about with Jesus when he talks about Lazarus, the Lazarus parable. You know, is that a parable or is he really counting what actually happened with you know, kind of that divide across, you know. And I tend to fall on the side that this is that is a real event. I don't think that's just an illustration, because in parables, Jesus usually doesn't use proper names. He names Lazarus specifically. He doesn't introduce it like the other parables. I think he's trying to give a real spiritual truth there, not a parable, not a truth. Does he believe that God tells lies? I mean, that's the troubling part. Is God using a lying spirit? Does that trouble anybody else in the room?
Yeah,
well, it just reminds me of the whole idea of we find other places in the Bible where this happens. If you harden your heart often enough, God's going to harden it for you permanently.
It's both. Yeah.
You know? So I see this kind of going on. He's self-deceived, 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 self-deceived. Okay. You know, you're deceived.
Hand it over to him. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Before God right now. Mm-hmm. So the devil and his demons have access to God.
Yeah, how about that?
So it doesn't trouble me in the fact that I know God uses evil men, evil angels, what we would call demons, to do his will. So that's what happens.
It troubles me, though, because they're sitting around the throne room, you know? Like, there wouldn't be demons
Wherever the Lord is the throne room.
That's true. But I'm picturing like an angel, like an angel entice.
But in Job, the devil straight up
to him. Yeah, he's talking to him. Yeah, is he like at the buzzer outside the gated community? Like, I think he's talking to him, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, Danny, were you going to say?
I was going to say
And God allowed it.
Yeah, Job will blow your mind. There's some. Yeah, it's hard to wrap your mind around what's going on at the beginning of Job. And then the other part, are these prophets good men? You know, are they literally prophets of the Lord? Based on what I've been reading, I would say no. If they're working for Ahab, they're not. And so, is it all that much to have false prophets say false things? I mean, you know, and I think God is sovereign over the real prophets and the false prophets. I think he can control their, you know, their lying to fit his will. You know, I think that's what we've got to kind of fall on here, is God has control. It's not like these guys are acting independently with agency. So I guess the question is, what does this story say about God? And I'm, you know, I'm not sure I have a perfect theological answer on it. But again, I'm always going to fall on the side of sovereignty. I'm always going to fall on the side of trusting a God who is in control and knows what needs to be done for his will. And, you know, it's like one of those hard questions that you have to answer where if, you know, you're in your house and somebody invades your house and you know your family's hiding in the closet and they say, pull a gun on you and say, is anybody else in the house? Is it a sin to lie in that situation? You know, it's one of those premises that, you know, is it a lie? Is a lie a lie? Because somebody asked you a question and you didn't tell the truth? Or are there ways that lies can be used? And that's a troublesome path to go down, right? I mean, we don't even want to talk about that.
Right, because then you just end up deciding.
Then I could rationalize my lie. So it's a really difficult thing. But if I can keep God in charge of this, and Micaiah is speaking not in parable, but in a literal vision that he saw from God, then who am I to say that God can't use a lying spirit? I guess that's where I'm coming down on. That probably doesn't satisfy everything, but some things we don't understand.
What they have in power.
Yeah. Yeah, evil kings and good kings alike are put there by his sovereign will. So, yeah. Yeah, you know. Sometimes, I mean, ideally kings are supposed to, you know, defend the innocent, punish the guilty, and uphold justice. But in many cases, they don't. And maybe that's judgment. Maybe that's the results of a fallen world. Maybe that's several different things.
In the early service, Pastor ended it, sometimes we just don't understand the mysteries of God. This is one of them. I mean, this is something that, you know, so we get to that side of heaven.
I mean, even the whole idea of prophecy. I mean, how do we understand that? You know, so we're in deep territory when we're talking about this.
What you just said in Proverbs, because I read it down, the last part of that was that the Lord established his steps.
Yeah. we're going to go, you know, we have, I like to say, you know, we have as much free will as he chooses to give us at any given moment. You know, we love this idea of free will, but the fact is, sometimes we don't have that free will, you know. Did Paul have free will on the Damascus Road? I don't know. Because yeah, Paul said, no thanks, God. I'm gonna pass.
We like free will until we want him to impose on someone else.
Yeah, exactly. You know? We like our self-suiting free will, yeah. Yeah, exactly. All right, so just a few things to keep in mind as we look at this. Micaiah clearly shapes his account of the lying spirit as a denunciation or a denouncement of the 400 prophets. The reason why he's saying that is to say these guys are all false. They're all liars, okay? And they have a lying spirit. You know, whatever that is, he is denouncing them. So, because Zedekiah and Ahab certainly take that as an insult. They wouldn't have thrown him in jail, and he wouldn't have gone up and punched him if he wouldn't have thought that this was an insult. Okay? It's difficult to call the Lord a liar in the story when he announces before Ahab goes to battle that a lying spirit has been placed in the prophet's mouth. You know, it would be one thing if he said this after the fact. You know, but he's saying, I'm doing this on purpose so you will go to battle. It's hard to call him a liar when he's doing that. I mean, what he's saying is actually going to happen. So it's hard to go lie on that. It's a warning for Ahab, but again, Ahab would rather go with the 400 false prophets than the one true prophet. And the text really focuses on God's sovereignty. Nothing escapes the Lord's attention, and no one operates outside of his jurisdiction. Okay? He is in full control of this battle, and we're going to see that when the battle takes place. It is a great picture of when the Lord has a plan, it doesn't matter what you do, his plan will come to fruition, not yours. And that's exactly what Ahab will find out the hard way. So really, what's happening here is Ahab has shown mercy. Does he really have to send Micaiah in there? Does he have to give Micaiah a vision? This is accomplishing his goal. Just the 400 prophets saying, go, take it. You're going to win the battle. That's going to accomplish God's prophecy of Ahab dying. Right? But he sends Micaiah in to say, they're lying to you. They're not telling you the truth. This is all to entice you to go. And Ahab still doesn't pay attention to the warning. So I think Micaiah is a great example of God's mercy in a situation. He doesn't have to send him in there, and yet he does.
I don't see it as mercy. I think it's God demonstrating his sovereignty to a lot of people.
To a lot of witnesses.
To a lot of witnesses. And he's jealous for his name.
Yeah.
Because these 400 guys are supposedly prophesying in his name, although they don't use the term, thus saith the Lord. But he doesn't want this whole thing to go down without his actual truth being spoken somewhere along the way.
Yeah, I would agree with that, too.
And maybe this is true. Isn't this early in Jehoshaphat's kingdom?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he'll be around for a while.
And he's a good king.
Yes.
So he's establishing also the fact that, you know, this guy's on the right side. Because he's on his head. Isn't there another prophet? So maybe that has something to do with it, too, that we're drawing our lines.
Yeah, maybe it's a lesson for him in the long run.
Maybe.
Yeah, like I said, I think there's a lot going on in this scene. So, and then we have the face-to-face with the prophets where Zedekiah comes up and punches him.
Yeah.
How did the Spirit of the Lord go from me to speak to you? I'm the prophet here, not you. And he says, oh, you'll find out. You'll see what I mean by that.
I see this as a lesson for us today.
I hope so,
Well, what I'm saying is that, okay, we know what we want to do. Mm-hmm. And one person comes and says, no, you don't. Well, we're going to go to the multitude because more people agree with me, so I must be right. Mm-hmm. So...
Yeah, the majority is not always truth, right? Just because the majority believes something is true doesn't mean it's right. Just look around the country. You know, the majority of this country believes a lot of things that aren't true.
And I'm
going
to keep looking until I find one individual.
Yeah, I like agreement, you know. I like somebody to confirm what my...
I'm right.
Yeah, exactly. I'm saying I'm not always right, but I'm never wrong, you know. I mean, that's... I can rationalize something out of it.
You can propagate that.
Oh, yeah. There's some really interesting studies on that mob mentality, if you ever do any psychology and stuff like that. How easy it is to follow the crowd. And we tend to do that even in extreme situations.
They have a name for it. Mobocracy.
Yeah, I mean, it's Rome, if you want to see the parallels. But Tara will teach Zedekiah all he needs to know about the Lord. You're going to be hiding in an inner room one day begging for your life, and you'll know what you did this day. That's what he tells him. And it's the same inner chamber word that's used where Ben-Hadad was hiding after he lost that battle at Aphek. So he's made. I think the author's making a parallel there. So they've had enough of him. They throw him into jail. And Micaiah places himself under Moses' standards for a prophet, which is, if you ever utter a false prophecy, you're not a prophet. You know, it was really, there was no pretty good prophets. You know, there wasn't some, you know, so anytime you see these, you know, whack jobs on TV claiming to be prophets, you know, and they miss their prophecies left and right, you know, that's just good enough to get stoned in the Old Testament. You know, I mean, you don't miss a prophecy. You don't almost get a prophecy right. You're either a prophet or you're not. And so, look what Micaiah says when they're dragging him into prison. Okay, if you return, you'll know I wasn't telling the truth. But I don't expect to see you again. And his last thing is, hear all you people. Like, listen to me. If he comes back, I am a false prophet. If he comes back, kill me, is what he's saying. You can execute me if he survives this battle. Because God told me he's going to die. And you can trust my word. So really what should happen is all those 400 prophets should be executed when they come back and Ahab doesn't survive. Okay, so here's the idea. Ahab has no excuse. He has been given the information. He's not, there hasn't been a trick. There hasn't been any symbolic thing going on. They haven't, you know, kind of pulled the wool over his eyes. Micaiah came to him and said, you're going to die at this battle because you've chosen to go against the Lord. And so Ahab is responsible for his own decision here. God is sovereign, and Ahab is responsible for his decision. Okay? That's the tension we're always dealing with. God is perfectly sovereign in his will being executed, and yet Ahab chooses to go to battle despite the warnings. Okay? Both of those at the same time. All right, so let's see what happens in the battle. So the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat, the king of Judah, went up to Ramoth-Gilead, and the king of Israel said to Jehoshaphat, I will disguise myself and go into battle, but you wear your robes.
You say that.
Yeah. Okay. And the king of And the king of Israel disguised himself and went into battle. And the thing that just boggles my mind is Jehoshaphat agrees to this. Okay. You know. It's not even his battle. Okay, I'll do it. Now the king of Syria had commanded the 32 captains of his chariots, fight with neither small nor great, but only with the king of Israel. The instructions Ben-Hadad gave to his troops was, take out Ahab. And Ahab knew that. I think he knew he was going to be a target, obviously. And when the captains of the chariots saw Jehoshaphat, they said, it is surely the king of Israel. So they turned to fight against him, and Jehoshaphat cried out. Now, the idea here is when he cries out, he probably has a different dialect. He probably cries out something Judean, you know, something that a different accent or a different dialect. And they go, wait a second, that doesn't sound like Ahab. And they look, it's not him. Okay, so that's what it means when he cries out. And when the captains of the chariot saw that it was not the king of Israel, they turned back from pursuing him. But a certain man drew his bow at random and struck the king of Israel between the scale armor and the breastplate. Not even aiming at him. Draws his bow at random. And there's one small crack, you know, it's like Smaug in The Hobbit. You know, there's one hole you can get the arrow in, and that's where the arrow hits him. Okay, it's Ahab in his chariot. Therefore he said to the driver of his chariot, turn around and carry me out of the battle, for I am wounded. And the battle continued that day, and the king was propped up in his chariot facing the Syrians until at evening he died. So he didn't leave the battle, because if the king flees, everything kind of falls apart. So they've got him propped up in the chariot while he's basically bleeding out. Just so he can stay for the battle, he dies that evening. And the blood of the wound flowed into the bottom of the chariot, and about sunset a cry went through the army, every man to his city, and every man to his country. And if you remember Micaiah's prophecy, we see it come into fulfillment right there. So the king died and was brought to Samaria, and they buried the king in Samaria, and they washed the chariot by the pool of Samaria, and the dogs licked up his blood. I think we've heard that before. Yeah. And the prostitutes washed themselves in it, according to the word of the Lord that he had spoken. Now the rest of the acts of Ahab and all that he did, and the ivory house that he built, and all the cities that he built, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel? So Ahab slept with his fathers, and Ahaziah his son reigned in his place. All right. So Ahab prepares for war against Ben-Hadad again. I think this is the third time we've seen a battle against this adversary. And Ahab has his plan. I'll look like a regular soldier. You go out in your robes. And again, inexplicably, Jehoshaphat agrees to the plan. Okay? Well, why? Well, he knows how much Ben-Hadad hates him. He knows they don't have a good relationship, so he'll have a target on his back. Perhaps he's had some spies that have overheard that they're going to target Ahab in battle. Maybe that's a possibility. Or probably, I think, a big part of it, he knows the prophecy, and he's trying to escape the prophecy. Well, if they don't know I'm the king, they won't come after me. I'll be able to hide in the midst of the soldiers, and I'll be able to survive. And again, his fears are not unfounded, because he's going to focus on killing Ahab. And at first they chase Jehoshaphat, because they all think it's him,
right? And the only properly attired king on the battlefield, they assume that's Ahab. They chase him around, and they stop chasing him. You know, they're not even interested in him once they figure out it's not him. You know, it's not even I don't even think they know that Jehoshaphat is there.
It almost seems like Ahab is recognizing that the Lord has spoken truth,
mm-hmm.
but he's trying to, like, oh, I'll show him.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really...
Yeah, I can overcome the prophecy. Yeah.
He believes the prophecy.
Yeah.
He
wouldn't do this if he didn't. Yeah.
Exactly. But yet, he thinks he's going to be able to pull one over our God.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it seems like this works, right? They stop chasing him, and they're like, we don't know where the king of Israel is. We have no idea where Ahab is. And Ahab's disguised as evidence of unclear thinking, because if Micaiah had truly been lying, there's no danger. And if he's telling the truth, you're not going to escape, right? If he's lying, then what do you have to worry about, Ahab? If he's telling the truth, which I think Ahab believes, how are you going to escape this? You know, there's no way out of this. This guy's also a harbinger of disaster. It calls the actions of both Saul and Jeroboam just before their deaths. So both Saul and Jeroboam tried to disguise themselves, and it didn't work. You'd think he'd know his history. And it does the same thing here. So it's foolish to think that a mere disguise will hide someone from the Lord's purpose. Right? If I just hide in the crowd, God won't know that I'm here. Okay? Or I can pull the wool over. So I like this here, because where it says that the man drew his bow at random, the Hebrew there literally means in his innocence. He's not even aiming. It's like he just pulls one in the air and lets it go. And it lands right in between the breastplate of Ahab's armor and kills him. Okay? The guy doesn't even know where he's shooting at. You know, feel like he's falling down and just lets go of the arrow. No idea. So I think, in case we missed it, the author's trying to tell us God is sovereign. All right? The arrows are going to hit where they need to hit. You know, he will guide even those arrows. Okay, prophecy is fulfilled. Remember what Micaiah said, I saw all Israel scattered on the mountains as sheep that have no shepherd, and the Lord said, these have no master, let each return to his home in peace. And look at what they say when Ahab dies, every man to his city and every man to his country. They have no leader, they're all scattered amongst the hillside, let's go home. You know, we have lost, let's run. So they're heading home. And you see, Isaiah pulled the same imagery in Isaiah 53, right? A sheep without a shepherd. The people without that leadership, people tend to scatter. People tend to do crazy things, and that's what we see happening. Okay? So the king died and was brought to Samaria, and they buried the king in Samaria, and they washed the chariot by the pool of Samaria, and the dogs licked up his blood, and the prostitutes washed themselves in it according to the word of the Lord that he had spoken. So, of course, this isn't a random death or anything like that.
It says, and the dogs lifted up his blood, and they washed his armor according unto the word of the Lord which he spake. So it's the same thing about prophecy.
Yeah, if you look at this, I'll show you in Deuteronomy 23:17-18. The word here for dog in the Hebrew could also mean male prostitute. So I think that's what the ESV is doing with the translation. And so that the wages of a dog are the wages of a male prostitute. And so it's a warning against all that, but either way. You know, because dogs tend to be symbolic of Gentiles in the Old Testament. Anybody that's not inside of Israel tends to be a dog. But apparently that word is a parallel to male prostitute, and that's why they chose to do it that way. So Ahab cannot hide from his sins. And if you remember, this goes way back several chapters now. An unnamed prophet foretold Ahab's death when he let Ben-Hadad go. Elijah predicted what would happen with the dogs licking up his blood. Micaiah warned of what would happen specifically in the battle. And Ahab paid the price for both his complicity in killing Naboth and his rejection of the Lord and his word. So he is paying for all his sins here at the battle. And remember, the prophecy was made against Jezebel as well. Unfortunately, we're going to have to wait several chapters before we get to see Jezebel get hers. She manages to survive a little while longer, but it's going to end even worse for her. So it talks about Ahab's accomplishments there. The ivory house that he built and all the cities that he built. Well, when they did a dig a while back at Samaria, they found 200 pieces of carved ivory that was in a royal compound there at Samaria. So this issue of him having houses of ivory, they found the ivory that he was using in his house when they dug at Samaria. So it matches up perfectly with Scripture. Okay. And Ahaziah succeeds, and now the rest of the prophecy is all your sons are going to die too in the same way. So here's a guy, imagine that, you get to take the throne, and you know that this prophecy is hanging over your family, that
you are going to die too, and you're going to pay for all this. Remember, it was supposed to be Ahab that had the full punishment, but then when he repents that one time, he says, well, I'm going to hold off, and I'm going to give it to your son. So we've seen Ahab listen to the prophets. Ahab's really kind of interesting sometimes because I think he believes. I think he knows Yahweh is God. He's just so selfish and self-centered that he can't submit to that. So sometimes he listens to prophets. We've seen him repent. He builds a strong military. Israel is really strong underneath him. He constructs a beautiful palace. And then at the same time, he bows to his wife's plan about Baal worship. He bows to his wife's plan about Naboth's vineyard. He benefits from that murder. He ignores the Lord's prophet as his final act. And so here's the guy that we see. He has an intellectual understanding of who God is, and yet he will not submit to the lordship of God. You know, he will not submit to the sovereignty of God. And I think if there's anything that we see in this country is a lot of people that have an intellectual understanding of God, or at least a want to have an intellectual understanding of God, but this whole, submitting my life to somebody that's larger than me, that makes me really uncomfortable. You know, I like the idea of God, and I like the idea of blessings, and I like the idea of all that. But when it comes to submitting my life to something, well, I can't go that far. You know, it's why you've got all these alternate kind of perceptions of God and all this New Agey stuff and everything else that mixes in with Christianity. And it really doesn't matter what this book says. Just know God. You know, it really doesn't matter what it says. Just get one-on-one with God. You know, this generic God sort of term. And I think what I preached on last Sunday with 1 Corinthians 10, you may not be speaking to God at that point. You may be speaking to a demon. And they're perfectly fine with you thinking that they're God. You know, worshiping a God that's not really God. Not really a God of Scripture. Yeah. So I think that's what we see in Ahab. A guy that should know better. He has all the information at hand, and yet he won't do it. So next week we'll touch real quick on Jehoshaphat and then bridge right into 2 Kings, where Elijah has his last bit of ministry before he takes that little ride up to heaven. So let's close in prayer. Father, thank you for today. Thank you for this time and for your word, and help us to recognize some of the parallels that are going along in the 21st century that happened back in Ahab's days, and help us to avoid those stumbling blocks, and help us to be an effective witness in this world that seems to run farther and farther from you every time we turn around. Give us opportunities to do that, Lord. Help us to serve you better. Do the 10:45 service, Lord, and all the travel that's going down to the lake today. Pray the weather would be acceptable, but let your will be done, and we'll praise you and thank you for it. In Jesus' name, amen.